My name is Tom Robinson, Deputy Chief with the Reno Police Department. I'm just going to kind of recap everything that we talked about yesterday for those of you that were on scene yesterday. And I might have a couple different details than we provided yesterday. As we went through the evening last night, we refined some of that information. So, is this someone's phone up here?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. At 2:05 p.m., the initial call came into our dispatch center reporting a shooter at the Center for Advanced Medicine at 1500 East 2nd Street. Within 2 minutes, under 2 minutes, the first Reno police officers arrived on scene. REMSA's tactical EMS crew was on scene under 4 minutes. After the initial on-scene arrival by Reno police officers, we were joined by several of our local partners from Washoe County Sheriff's Office, Sparks Police Department, Reno Sparks Indian Colony Police, the School District Police, DA's Office, Reno Fire Department, and as I mentioned earlier, REMSA. With those agencies, several what we call emergency action teams were formed and immediately entered into the building. Those teams conducted a room-by-room, floor-by-floor search of the building until they ultimately arrived on the third floor, where they located two injured subjects and then two deceased persons. The officers began providing aid to those injured and worked with the REMSA TEMS unit to evacuate the injured and got them transported in under 12 minutes of the initial call. The other officers on scene started working with the different office buildings and started facilitating a shelter in place and evacuating the people who needed to be evacuated. 2:13 p.m., we created an incident command center right there on Pringleway and 2nd Street, which was attended by executives from all of our local regional law enforcement partners. At 2:20 p.m., just as a matter of pure precaution, we placed Renown, at 2:20 p.m., we placed Renown on lockdown. We sent two teams of officers over to Renown, locked down the facility, but still facilitated keeping the emergency room open for transports that may come in. We worked very closely from the initial onset of the call with Renown's executive team, and they were also part of our incident command. Some of the other things the officers were doing during the initial phases of the investigation, other than securing the initial building itself, we had numerous reports of suspicious people that we tracked down and suspicious vehicles. All of those checked out okay. By 4 p.m., the building itself was declared safe, and we lifted the lockdown on Renown, and that's really when we started the investigative phase of this incident. And for details on that, I'll turn it over to Deputy Chief Mac Venzon.
Good morning. Once the initial response was winding down, it becomes a responsibility of the men and women of the Investigations Division of the Reno Police Department and our partnering agencies to piece together a timeline of events, attempt to establish a motive, and determine additional investigative strategies and needs. Immediately, the Investigation Division began to interview witnesses to the event. To date, 29 witnesses have been interviewed, with more interviews pending. Based on what we have learned from those interviews, the preliminary investigation has revealed that the suspect entered the building, made his way to the third floor, to the offices of Urology of Nevada. As we have pieced together the information, preliminary investigation also has revealed that the suspect went past the front desk into the area of the patient examination rooms, armed with a 12-gauge shotgun. The suspect fired a total of 5 rounds, one of which appears to be the shot that fatally wounded him. As he moved through the examination area, the suspect fired at least 4 rounds from the shotgun, striking 3 victims, fatally wounding 1 and critically wounding 2. The suspect made his way back to the lobby area of Urology of Nevada, where he turned the gun on himself. As to the future of the investigation, detectives will be trying to establish a timeline of events leading up to yesterday's incident, determine further witnesses that need to be interviewed, and piece together the entire event as it occurred yesterday. All of this could take several weeks to piece together for the investigators. I'm going to identify for you some of the victims, and out of respect for the family and at their request, not all of the victims will be identified. As we work through that, we will get you that information. One of the decedents is Dr. Charles Goldion. One of the other victims, Shantae Spears, was a patron of the practice and suffered a single gunshot wound. The other victim, a female victim, has requested that we not identify her. She suffered a single gunshot wound as well, and we'll get you that information as soon as we get that with the family. Both victims are being treated at Renown Medical Center and are listed in critical condition. The shooter has been tentatively identified. However, we will not release the name of the shooter until we have had the opportunity to notify next of kin. We would ask that you respect the victim's privacy, please. I'll turn it over to Chris Goff.
Hello, I'm Chris Goff, the Chief Operating Officer at Renown Regional Medical Center, and was the liaison officer in the incident command yesterday. So unfortunately, our community has experienced yet another tragedy. That's certainly the tragic news of yesterday. And I want to echo what Chief Pitt said. Our primary focus today is taking care of our patients, making sure that our visitors, our families, and our physicians remain safe. And we're doing that in coordination with our local law enforcement, and just appreciate all of the coordination that we have. Again, I would ask that we respect the privacy of these patients and their families, and also respect that this has been something that's hit our medical community. It's not just hit Renown, it's hit our medical community. We're a tight-knit group. Clearly, the situation changed things yesterday when it happened on our own doorstep. So our primary focus was obviously to take care of the victims, and we've done that as evidenced by the report already. And then the secondary focus is obviously to secure the scene with local law enforcement, which we were able to do. I think that what I want the community message to be is that they can have confidence that in these tragic and unfortunate times, they can rely on this community. And that involves Renown Regional Medical Center. It also involves our local law enforcement, our EMS. It's a partnership that we have. And we come together in times of need, and I think that's been evident. And I would just like to echo that. I would like to briefly introduce Dr. Michael Morkin. He is one of our ER physicians, also our incoming chief of staff. Clearly, we got some tragic news yesterday that involved one of our physicians, and I'd like him to be able to say a few things.
Hi, I'm Mike Morkin. As Chris said, I'm an incoming chief of staff and one of the senior emergency physicians at Renown. As she said, we've been doing way too many of these things recently. Two of the physicians involved yesterday are both friends of mine, exceptional physicians, kind of doctor I wish I could be. It was a very difficult time for the medical community. These people, the physician who passed away is going to be extremely difficult. In fact, can't be replaced. And the physician with critical injuries is going to face a road. We would ask, that we respect the privacy of the families, and please have them in your prayers. It's a very difficult time for all of us.
Hi there. My name is Lori Fralick, and I'm the supervisor of the Victim Services Unit here at Reno Police Department. We're a civilian unit within the department, and our role is to provide crisis intervention, victim advocacy, and support to victims of crime and to community tragic events, such as yesterday's. Just briefly, I responded to the command post and tried to assess witnesses and number of victims that were going to be needing services. We have 6 full-time staff that we then sent in different directions to 4 locations, including the emergency room to work with the victims' families, and then also to a room where we had a lot of witnesses identified that needed some immediate assistance. We also responded back to the station here at Reno PD where witnesses were being brought in. They were deeply affected, very emotional. They were friends and coworkers of the primary victims, and so we had advocates here on scene to provide services to them in between their law enforcement interviews that they were doing. We are working with the 3 primary victims and all of their families on kind of a plan. This is obviously a huge loss for them. Very, very tragic, and they are just beginning a very long journey. When we ask to respect their privacy, you guys are always so great about that, but it's really a necessity for the primary victims. It's not just a request. It's really something so private, and they are right now just trying to be with each other, their children, and trying to focus on what their life is going to look like after yesterday, how they're going to put some pieces back together. So thank you for that. We also have 40 individuals that were interviewed by law enforcement that were either in the office as employees, again, friends or patrons, and we've done assessments on all of them, and we'll be following up with each of them today and through the upcoming weeks with more resources in terms of trauma therapy, referrals, and what compensation or resources they're going to be entitled to. And I think that that kind of sums it up. I just want to mention something that Chris Goss said. We run into each other far too often with tragedies and see the Renown staff in situations like this. And I can't say enough about their social workers, their medical staff, their support staff. When we walk in the doors, it's like we're a part of the same team. It's like it's our workplace. And they just say, what do you need? And it's provided. And so I just want to say that the patients were cared for and are being cared for in ways that should make everybody feel very comfortable. And working with our staff, I want to thank all of the other law enforcement agencies for offering up and providing their victim advocates. Sparks PD's advocate responded to help us. We had offers from District Attorney Gamick's advocates were on standby should we have needed more people coming in. The county, the sheriff's office, we just kind of come together as a team, and everybody says, how many do you need and where do you want them? School police, their advocates. So unfortunately, like has already been said in previous comments, we get too much practice at this, and but it really is a team effort, and I want to thank everybody else that responded and is continuing to provide resources for the families. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like Chris, Mac, Tommy, and Lori come up. We had discussed last night and this morning, you know, kind of not really the early lessons learned, but what are some initial takeaways for us as a community and as a law enforcement community here in this region? And initially, we talked about the regional response from all first responders. Lori talked about it in more detail. I mean, every agency really in Northern Nevada rallied resources to come to the aid of the Reno Police Department in this community. It was incredible. Can we make improvements to those responses? Absolutely. With the most recent unfortunate incident at Sparks Middle School, we've worked, the law enforcement leaders have worked very closely in this region to put together even a better response, if you can imagine that, to these incidents. Unfortunately, these incidents occur in our country with some high frequency. We often hear about them two or three times a month. And the question from the community, at least to me, and I'm sure to many of you that serve in this profession, is how do you prevent this? So an initial discussion we had was, we all have family, friends, and associates that encounter challenges and crises in their lives. They begin having difficulty dealing with those things, and obviously their behavior changes, sometimes in an aggressive way. What can we do? We can become vigilant, and preventing these incidents in the future will involve education, community, and early intervention. But most importantly, that we all take responsibility to report persons or activities like this to law enforcement or refer those individuals to the appropriate resources. And with that, that concludes really the formal lineup. We will take, as a team, this team right here, we'll take four or five questions. Please state your name, who you're with, and who you'd like to ask the question of. Sir.
Paul Nelson with Channel 2 News. This is probably for our Deputy Chief Robinson. Do we know if there's any relationship between the shooter and the victims?
Deputy Chief Mac Venzon, we're still trying to piece together the timeline of events. To our knowledge, there is no relationship between them, or familial relationship between them. As we start to put the investigation together and move out of this preliminary investigative mode and more into an in-depth investigation, we'll be able to answer that question for you.
Sure.
Yeah. Scott Sauer with Associated Press. Yesterday, Deputy Chief Robinson indicated that he did not think it was necessarily a random shooting, but not necessarily targeting individuals. That seems to be kind of contradictory. Can you explain why it might not be? You had a good answer.
You know, I would tell you that still, while we try to piece this thing together, we're trying to figure out what that relationship, if there is a relationship at all. But the fact that the shooter went through the first and second floor, made his way to the third floor of the building, would indicate to me that it's not a random event. And so I guess when you look at whether or not you characterize this as a random event, certainly it would lead us to believe that, no, it's not a random event.
Ma'am.
Rosana from Telemundo Las Vegas. Do we know if he was a patient before that particular hospital?
The question was, do we know if he's a patient of that particular hospital? That, I don't have that information yet. That's still part of the investigative process, and we'll put that all together as we learn.
Joe?
Chief Joe Hart with Channel 4. When you're saying you need to pay attention to warning signs if people are under stress or having problems, is this suspect, did he display any of those signs, and were there any threats of any kind that he made?
I would have to say I don't have any knowledge right now of any threats that we've uncovered in the investigation, but I think there are some indicators that if someone was paying attention, maybe early intervention or communication of the need for early intervention would have made a difference. The thing we know, naturally, when you study these incidents in hindsight, right, of course being 2020, that there's usually these indicators that exist.
Were there staff members that tried to stop him by any chance? Oh, Kai Plaska on Capital Public Radio.
Cool.
We don't have that information yet. To my knowledge, no, but we're still in the initial part of the investigation. It's hard to determine how the whole timeline of events went, and we're trying to establish that now.
One more question. Terry.
Terry Russell from Channel 8. Did you find any other guns? Did he arrive in a car? Do you know any of that?
Terry, we do know that he arrived in a vehicle, and as far as the other guns go, when they finish processing the scene, we'll have that information for you.
All right, thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Can you spell the one name you gave us?
Yes.
I did email it.